September 13, 1999. Here goes.
Go ahead, Bob.
Greetings, Evergreen.
Greetings, Bob.
I'm interested to start off about when the Boodians altered us. They created a subconscious. Did they create memory?
No.
A memory function?
No.
Did Neanderthal animals have a memory?
Yes.
Did they make any cultural extensions of that memory?
Some, but not much.
Right. I mean, they didn't have any writing or
no.
much communication.
No.
So I'm wondering what does the altering or the creating of the subconscious, if it's not memory, what is it that creates the difference between humans and beasts, as I assume that's what the effect of that altering is?
If you would see the mind as a bicameral unit, and the construction of a bicameral, it gives the act of reflection and cognizance to memory. Memory by itself. All organisms would have a memory of one type or another. But the mind may use it as reference. A dog would snarl at a person who had harmed it because the dog has a memory.
Right.
And a triggered response. But not a cognizant response.
What is it? Go ahead.
The difference being is that you can take memory and use memory. You see, you're not bound by instinctive memory.
Right, you can remember on a meta level. You remember that what you have remembered.
Yes.
Right, and then you can store it. So it's kind of it's a meta version of memory.
Yes.
So that's the beginning of what humans are.
Yes.
And that's the beginning of love, emotion, and soul, in quotes, in human terms.
In a way, yes, but realize that these things, love, emotion, all of these things are decisions. There's a biological constant in this. There is a conditioned response that can humans go beyond conditioned response. With reflection, yes, the basis of psychotherapy is that.
Right. So reflection is the mirror. Memory is a mirror, I guess, but not as agile as human memory or human mirroring?
Yes. But the human mind can distort the mirror if it chooses.
So the fact is, this is free will then in decision making?
In decision making, yes.
So that's the sense of the individual's control out of the environment, yes. Away from the environment.
Yes. You can train a dog to attack, and it will. But that, if left alone, that is the action that it will do. To not have it do this, you must retrain it to not attack. You see?
Yeah, you can't tell it to not attack, and then it says, oh, yes, I won't attack anymore.
Exactly.
So that is like the alteration removed us from embedment in matter and actually created us on another dimension.
Yes.
You know, we're not into the astral plane, but we've created us something, a very interesting new empty, the ghost in the machine, so to speak.
Yes.
The body machine.
Yes. The dictates of memory were altered. The ability ability to cognize a memory.
Yeah, it becomes plastic. You can manipulate it.
Yes.
Okay, that's... And that is... What... Did you want to say something else? Now,
certain things, at certain levels, it becomes difficult the deeper you go. That you can alter certain autonomic responses of the body. Then is the study of deeper aspects of yoga, certain areas of meditation, this like, where you can actually, by conscious choice, alter the autonomic responses of the body. But this is still an extension of altering the autonomic responses that would be done by memory.
I mean, it's still within the pre-altered memory.
Yes.
Yeah, instinctual.
Yes.
Well, is the bicameral mind the effect of the altering?
Yes.
So the that is the doubleness of consciousness.
Yes. You see, the great problem with memory is that, in truth, memory is not selective. Before the bicameral mind, memory was there. Almost as a reality. By putting a bicameral mind, then reality is altered.
Yeah, totally. You've created something, a consciousness. You've like brought another dimension, another plane back into this dimension.
Interpretation.
Yes.
It's like awakening. The soul that is in matter, from rocks up to animals, suddenly has become aware of itself.
Yes.
Yet it was done by the Buddhians, and it's going to take 150 years before humans can really accept this on scientific knowledge level.
Yes.
Because it's a blow to what? To our old ego?
To a degree, for some it will be, for some it won't matter one bit or another.
Right. Now, the doubleness that this creates the ambiguity and the peculiarity of the human angst and the human knowledge and human knowing. It's a paradox. It's a blessing and not. You know, it creates people's... Like yesterday I was talking to these women, and they have a real problem about what to do with their lives. The angst of whether they go this way or that way.
Yes.
And that's the tree of the fruit of the tree of knowledge is the altering.
Yes. Because, you see, where there is a bicameral, memory is in essence set aside and is replaced by cognizance, then choice becomes greater, wider, deeper, problematic.
Yes.
Wherever there is choice, there is always a difficulty.
So we actually matured when we got out of the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Though culture and religion said no. Mm. It yearned for back to the womb.
It yearned for a time when life was so simple. Either you dodge left or you dodge right. Either you're right or you're wrong. You're either eaten or you eat. You survive or you don't.
It's a yearning for a life that's simple, but one didn't know that life was simple when it was simple, in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was...
So not knowing it was simple, then the bicameral mind became a difficulty. But at the same time, a survival tool.
Right, but because it creates doubleness, it creates a past, a present, and a future, and you think you left someplace better.
Yes.
That's the nature of cognizance.
Yes.
Now, that's the essence of human perception. If you understand that, you understand everything we're going to understand about the mind.
Yes.
But what about when you bring in genetic engineering and create new human beings? Is that what we're going to get screwed up? Because we don't know how we were altered, we're not going to make successful cloned mini-me's.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The engineering will be to make this bicameralism better.
Because that's already here. We can't get rid of it.
No.
It's in the DNA, so to speak.
It's deeply there.
So that's the split between DNA and RNA. It's always a metaphor of two-ness. Every metaphor we have in science and knowledge is a metaphor of that doubleness.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
As the mirror. So that would be the mirror. But the mirror, when you look, reverses you. Now, this leads into some things, unless you wanted to add something to that.
Please continue.
I saw a tremendous showing of the crop circles in Mesquite, Nevada in August, when I was there in Nevada last month. This woman, Barbara Lamb, I think her name was, showed hundreds of photos. She even had photos from the 1st of August into July. Incredible crop circles that they're getting immediately and sending them out. But one of them, I bought a picture, and it looks like scattered chromosomes or a stereotypical presentation you'd see in a science book of genes or chromosomes. And I asked another psychic, Therese Dorer, in Kamloops, B.C., if the Boodians through the crop circles were showing us how they altered us. And my guardian angel guide coming through Therese says, yes. And actually, I was talking to a guide who was a Boodian, and it said, yes, that is what one meaning of the crop circles of the designs is, showing us how we were altered and what happened to us. Do the evergreens agree with that?
It's more than that.
What's the more?
The more is, can you recognize it for what it is? You see, present, let's suggest that you, an advanced being, goes to a portion of Africa that has not seen civilization for hundreds of years, and you show them something. They don't even know what it's for. So you keep on changing what you offer them until you eventually show them a stone axe, and they say, ah, that's a stone axe. Then you know exactly where they are.
Right.
They would not recognize a propane lighter. They would not recognize a tape recorder.
So the Boodians are trying to find out where we're at?
Yes.
Because they need to know. They don't fully understand us?
They understand, but they don't.
Okay, so I recognize, am I right to see that that crop circle with the chromosomes is a message about us being altered?
No, it's a message to those who would see it as a chromosome.
Right.
The only chromosomes they can work with are altered chromosomes.
The only ones we could work with?
The only ones they could show would have any sense would be altered.
Because
if you look at an unaltered chromosome, it has nothing to do with where, with what you know.
Right, we only know our post-altering biology.
Yes.
That's your point, I see. So it's showing and altered. But why is there so much emphasis on the spirals and maybe certain number of circles and beautiful shapes? They just recently showed a cube, you know, the image where the cube can go in or out. It reverses a normal...
Yes.
Optical illusion. Why are there? What's the meaning of the spirals? Is that the great mathematic?
If you understand spirals, you understand numbers. No one has taken one of those and put them on a computer screen and then superimposed the spiral on top of the spiral, then worked it out mathematically. That's yet to happen.
Would that get into fractals, or is that another kind of math?
It will show you what, that you can recognize what it is the key to those that did it.
Would it be a Fibonacci type of?
There are those numbers there too.
Okay.
But more sophisticated.
Yes.
But you're saying we would recognize what? Is it something that we knew or how they made the pyramids or something?
No, because it's out of your knowledge.
Right, so what will we recognize?
They can only show you what has any meaning to you.
Right.
And they keep altering them until someone recognizes what it is.
Which is something that we would recognize.
Yes, and then at that point, mankind has described himself.
To them.
Yes.
But when we recognize it's a shape of a bowl, or is it some concept we're going to recognize?
Concept.
Which is a pattern.
Yes.
So I see the spirals, and the spirals is the self-awareness of the mind. We're all in spiral. The doubleness creates spirals. So the spiral is the image of the memory, the cognizance we were talking about.
Yes.
But that's not what they're showing us?
No. You see it that way. But a mathematician would look at it differently.
Right. So it is a mathematics.
It's a mathematics, yes.
So it is linked to the great mathematic?
Mm.
No, it's a mathematic we know.
Yes.
It's trying to show us our mathematics.
Yes.
With a slightly different way of looking at it.
Yes.
So that we get a greater insight in mathematics from it?
So that there can be then a greater form of communication. If you're going to communicate, you've got to be on the same wavelength.
Right. Okay. So the Buddhists are a work in progress. They're trying to figure out what we know.
Well, they know much, they don't know all.
Right. And that's the drama, what I call the drama of cognition, the unpredictability of this reality.
Yes. And realize that the earth is not sociologically, scientifically, politically, not standing still.
Right. So you mean new knowledge will alter everything?
Absolutely. The new knowledge at present is being generated by the societies on the earth itself. So the knowledges of where this society goes, where this society has its ethics, where it has its direction. Only when the messenger can receive the message will the messenger send it.
That includes putting the device on the satellite.
Exactly.
Right. So I've said on the radio that the development of the universe now is that the Buddhians are now equal to us. We're equal. They have an identity crisis as much as we do in terms of figuring out where we're going.
Yes.
You know, I bring them down to our level or us to their level. We're equal in terms of nobody's totally in control. One civilization or the other.
Exactly.
Right. So what, a meme is a collective effect of cognizance?
Yes. To extend it one step further, where there's cognizance, there's a creation of memes.
Which I call ESP.
Let us first of all work on the level of ideas.
Okay.
Concepts. Where there's idea, where there's choice, there's always ideas and concepts. Some differ. What is the best way to do it? The ability to model on a computer has changed things considerably. The computer has compressed time.
Mm.
So if you need to suggest that in 1895, a model had been made of the work of Marx and Engels. The two.
A computer model.
A computer model. And ran it to its conclusion, adding in with all of its changes, etc. Would it have worked? No, Italian. It wouldn't have.
You mean the model was shown it wouldn't have worked?
The model was shown that it didn't work.
Because it would take in the factors, new technologies, and show what would happen to those?
Exactly.
Right.
Now, that which was proposed by Marx and Engels would not have worked because it did not take into account many other factors. Also, the description was wrong. But, no, there was no computer then. The only computer, and we use that word selectively, was putting it into living effect.
Right.
That was the only choice.
Yeah.
There was no other choice. And, oh, great minds thought it out. And they differed. Some said it would work and some said it wouldn't. So there was disagreement. But there was no way to put it through a computer. Now, computers will run theoretical systems and do so all the time. So therefore, certain means can be put as a computer program.
Right.
Certain beliefs. You see? Now, the rise of science fiction is interesting. Because science fiction is the writing about a meme if it continues.
Right.
So, as, in a way, then you could say that science fiction is a computer for memes. But still, the general way in which a meme was tested was to make a society out of it.
Yeah.
Now, the Oneida community had a meme.
Right.
So therefore they formed the Oneida community. The Oneida community eventually failed. You see?
Yeah.
But it took 2.5 generations to prove it.
So there we really compressed time. What is ESP or the 100th monkey effect then? Or is there a difference?
Memes spread fast. How they're spread is very interesting. That at a certain level, the interconnectedness of minds means that there is a sharing of certain knowledge when there is a sufficiency of that knowledge that would affect the greater amount.
Right, it seems to me then that that when we were altered, individual minds were created, which were little holes, but at a certain level of matter, interdimensional matter, the little holes are reconnected.
Yes.
Follow that?
Yes.
So when little minds start to rub up against each other, they then will hit the etheric level, metaphorically, and then it'll be spread across.
Yes.
Sort of approaching spirit again, metaphorically.
Very much so.
Right, I see that. Because I have a phrase I used, the title of my talk at Mesquite was cloning ESP. Now, it's not exactly what we just said, but I was thinking the computer helps to check out memes and see the whole thing, which is kind of like a foresight. So that's ESP.
Yes.
And we can do it faster.
Oh, yes.
All right, now you bring up science fiction. That brings up Marsh McLuhan. I'd like to talk to him for a minute. Can we locate him?
Yes.
He made a very interesting statement to his mother in a letter about supposedly in 1952, we don't have a date, where he said that the mechanical bride, he's decided, is a new kind of science fiction and also a new form of novel. Now, did he think that Joyce in Finnegan's Wake was doing science fiction?
Absolutely.
Because I've talked to Joyce back on January 18th, 95, I think it was, where he said that he in the future, if he lived, he would have written science fiction.
Yes.
But was that a hint to me that he'd already done science fiction?
See, a short answer is yes.
Was it because Lewis was writing science fiction at that time? They were writing intellectual science fiction.
Yes. Lewis was trying to explore the underside.
You mean the disservices?
The disservices, yes. That Joyce, on another level, another approach.
Was he wrestling with knowing, as we've been talking about, cognizance?
Not wrestling with it, but if you're the 99th monkey, how do you get the 100th monkey to be the 100th monkey? If you know you're the 99th.
I would say Joyce was the 99th and McLuhan was the 100th.
Mm. Good description.
Yeah.
You see a point. How do you influence the 100th monkey?
And that's what Joyce was thinking about in his terms?
These are more modern words,
right.
But he agrees with the concept.
Right. And, okay, so I like listening to Krishnamurti on TV in New York, and he always replays the process of cognizance and then how that creates desire and identification and then seduction of existence. McLuhan seems to follow that same process. Would McLuhan agree? I understand he didn't know of Krishnamurti, but had he, through his own thinking, now that he could see what Krishnamurti is doing in that state, was he working, when he used the phrase stages of apprehension, with what Krishnamurti talks about in his life?
Yes.
Right. Now, McLuhan saw that television was the externalization of that living process, correct?
A facet of it, yes.
What would be other facets?
He says it was the clearest facets. It's the clearest mirror.
Clearest mirror in terms of all that we've said so far.
Yes.
Yes. Did Joyce see that too about television?
No.
Did he see a shadow of it in movies?
Yes.
Right, so that's where McLuhan saw it clearer later.
Yes.
Now, did Krishnamurti's thinking help people see that in the Theosophical and the Joyce world? Or would anybody who doesn't pay attention to their own function of their mind, very quietly meditates on it, can learn that and realize it?
Meditation can learn on it.
And realize how the mind works.
The great problem that Krishnamurti has is, for some, there's only, as far as the effect is concerned, you're affecting the 90th, the 91st, the 92nd monkey.
That's...
There aren't enough monkeys around. You see?
When Krishnamurti was working, you mean?
Yes.
So that's why he remained frustrated?
Yes.
And would Joyce come after Krishnamurti, so to speak?
Yes.
Just the 98, 99?
Yes.
And then McLuhan, with television, completes the technological cycle. He could see it.
Yes, but realize that McLuhan also knew that television itself would not remain as television.
Yeah.
He knew this. Because he could see that it was an object in process.
Yeah.
And that while its fundamentals were not easily seen by others, but more easily seen by McLuhan, he could more easily see where it would go.
Could we say that where it went is that television is the Neanderthal mind, the computer chip brings in the altering that the Buddhists did to us, but the chip makes cognizance happen to the electronic TV process?
Yes.
Would McLuhan agree with that?
Absolutely.
And then that leads into virtual technologies.
It moves further into stages of beyond television.
Yes. It customizes cognition and cognizes for the individual.
Yes.
Right, so he saw that.
Yes, and could see that because of the demand on television, it itself would fractionalize.
Yes.
And as obviously has. But where next?
Well, I think cold fusion represents where next. That's my thesis, because when you get back to the raw biological needs of food and shelter and raw energy, you're flipping back into what's called hardware energy, out of the software. And it's the hardware fusion that cold fusion creates that frees us from too much embedment in virtual fractionalization, which could be a tyranny.
Yes, but before the session you mentioned a very interesting word, distraction.
I did that today?
You did indeed.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, take what McLuhan said hot and cold, cool mediums.
Yes.
And apply over that the concept of distraction.
It's interesting. I just listened to a tape of Eric McLuhan talking about his father on CBC this morning, and they were talking about Lucifer and how television creates distraction. But I relate that back to what Marshall said in one of his books, media create distraction from distraction.
Uh-huh.
But distraction is such a... Is that part of the cognizance factor?
Partially, but think of it this way. If living is short and brutal, what is the necessity of distraction?
It would be a great necessity.
A great necessity. Imagine a world where fusion is a fact, and those needs of sheer power are met. What's then the need of distraction then? Right. Or is there a need for mankind to be distracted in any event?
That's what we're wondering. That's what we're moving towards.
Yes.
And are the Boodians wondering that about themselves as they watch how we deal with that?
Yes.
In other words, if we can just pay attention to reality, which is sort of like a state of meditative being, how much can we sit motionless or just walk around like Krishnamurti seems to be, to observe things and not reacting?
Yes.
The reaction is the beginning of creating distraction.
Yes.
So that's the mystery that even God, who we have not found yet, but we know exists, to quote Taylor Greene's, even God is interested in what that will be?
Yes. Is a dog trained to attack easily distracted?
I don't know.
In other words, do dogs have distraction?
Yes, they do.
They do?
Well, they can be distracted by food or calling their name.
Well, that's not distraction. That's response.
But you can have multiple stimulus then.
Oh, yes, but are any of them distractions? You could say when an animal is in the process of eating, and another dog comes, that he is distracted by the other dog. But he's not. It's just another focus. He's not distracted.
Right, he can't be distracted because he hasn't been altered.
Exactly. Now, how is man distracted?
Through the fact that the mind is a whole that gives them different opportunities.
And different perspectives.
Right, that's what I meant, perspective.
So is the ability to be distracted a method of finding different alternatives?
Yes, and to me, the spiraling of the crop circles is the process of distraction. Mathematically.
Mathematically. The point here is, how many sitcoms can we watch?
When you say the point is, wasn't what I just said the point?
That's the point, but there's another point that McLuhan wants to make.
Okay.
And that is, how many sitcoms can we watch? And the answer is, until the answer you're looking for is being presented. Then sitcoms are no longer necessary.
Right, and then you're in a plateau of not needing to be distracted. But then, it naturally, a few weeks later, the distraction need surfaces again.
The distraction need is a constant. The distraction is there so that you can find the answer you want. It may not be where everyone says it is. The answer is, look it up in a book. But which book? And possibly it is not in a book. Possibly it's in a phrase on an inconsequential sitcom. And all of a sudden your mind says, that's the answer.
Okay, two things come up. It reminds me of the phrase I will hear when I die. The 13-year-old Indian woman says something as she's dying, giving birth, and that'll whip me into a loop that'll create a reincarnation.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
And then the other point is the Evergreens once said that the soul on the other plane can't take it all in, tries to create a little problem. then says, I will reincarnate and deal with that problem.
Good.
We're technologizing that process.
Yes. Now, if then distraction, then problem. The objective of being able to be distracted is to solve a problem. Life is a distraction.
Life is a problem.
And life is a problem. So Krishnamurti is trying to say it isn't.
Right. He claimed that there was a position where you could get a blissful state that he couldn't help you get, but he claimed it was there.
Yes. But if there is a blissful state, then that is that the ultimate distraction, or is it the ultimate removal of distractions?
Well, that answer or question leads to the quality of consciousness.
Yes, indeed it does.
No, we don't know who's leading, who's the guru, who's the smarter.
Which one is the correct?
Yeah, who's the emperor of the world? Who's at the center position?
Exactly.
So whenever you say we will find God, we haven't found God yet, but we will. People say to me when I tell them that, well, how do they know they're going to find God?
How will they know to recognize God?
How will we know? Is that what you just said?
How would you know to recognize God?
Well, that's what I asked you. How do the Evergreens know?
Because it...
I think what we just ran through kind of explained that.
Does.
Yes.
But what if God is the 100th monkey?
It's, and yes, and we will never get to that one.
Not soon.
Not soon. And if we do, then God is joins us in the problem.
Consider this. What if God is a distraction?
Yes. What if consciousness is a distraction?
And by that, we're able to find God.
Yeah, it's a problem and then solve it.
Yes.
And that doesn't stop, though.
No, because then you're on a different level of problems.
Right, so I think some souls reincarnate 3,000 lives and then move off the cycle of reincarnation.
Because they've visited every sitcom they can.
Right.
But, now here's the point. It took a lifetime each time to solve one part of the problem.
Yes.
There was no computer program that would very quickly go through all of the permutations that would be answer could be arrived at, not in 3,000 lives, but within a short period, within one.
And there never will be?
Oh, no, we're not saying that.
Yes.
What we're saying is, and this is McLuhan's point about television compresses life.
Yes. Okay, I think of Zappa saying, radio is fresh life, is new life. But that's the ongoing new songs presented every day, new life. Now, if this person goes off the cycle, they've reached maybe a Krishnamurti plateau and they're not reincarnating, but they're probably still conscious, and someday they will fall back into a new problem.
Yes.
So we have infinite lives.
Yes.
But it seems a general trend, there's like a mini eschaton. If you do about 3,000 lives, which most of us souls will do, we do get, have had time to see a lot.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And then we move to a point.
There, it is not necessary to have that many lives to solve the problem.
Ah, so then...
But that can only happen in an environment.
On this dimension.
On this dimension.
There's where the two dimensions come together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, if you were, and you have been, a farmer in a previous existence, so living through the seasons, but that was basically it, and it was a hard scrabble life, you still ate, but you worked really hard so that you could, there was no time for distractions. None.
Right.
Occasionally, but very rarely. And here you are in this life, and there's more opportunity for distractions. More is being accomplished in this life, strange as it may seem, than that prior life.
Right.
Now, people who would say go back to that miss the whole point.
Yeah.
Yes, you can go back, but you're going to learn nothing. Or you're going to learn much less than you're going to learn in this one. Now, the conversations that you've had comparing Toronto and New York.
Yes.
Can we pause 1 second, please? Please continue.
At one time, Toronto was that which you could encompass.
Or be inside of.
Be inside of.
Right.
It could wrap your arms around it. But then you go to New York. Different environment, different learning.
And as I've said, Toronto shrinks when I come back.
Yes.
Who's saying this to me, or noting this? Now.
McLuhan.
Oh, he knows I say this.
Yes.
Does he hear me say it when I'm down at my friend's house, or he can pick up it now when I'm tuned into him?
It's more easy this time. But he still observes.
He monitors me?
Sometimes.
Right, he can be where I am.
Yes.
Right. So what's your, anything more he wants to say about that?
The saying is, when an entity gets to go from Toronto to New York and now what he says is, put it in proportion, the person who goes from Oshawa to New York, Oshawa becomes smaller. It goes from Toronto to New York, Toronto grows smaller. Oshawa grows infinitesimal.
Yeah.
See? Now, what he says is, when you look at television as a medium, not only is the medium the message, but the message is changing the medium.
Yes.
Television of 1999 is not the television of 1953.
Right. I just read a book quote today at the UFT bookstore. The message is now free of the medium. And now, as you were saying, altering the medium.
It's altering. It's not totally free of the medium.
No. And there is, the internet is a medium.
Oh, yes, indeed.
So, but it's fractionalized.
And it is very much distractive.
Right.
Now, here is what McLuhan says. Take a good look at a medium, ask yourself how many distractions within it, and you will see the coming medium. The one that has the most distractions is the winner.
All right. That reminds me, in the Evergreens tape about 20 years ago of A Day in the Life of a Man in the Year 2078, where this young kid is inside a virtual environment and living a life and thinks it's real, I think it was in Australia, is that speeding up beyond what the Evergreens said or would not happen till 2078?
No, it's speeding up.
Ah, so when would you say that's going to happen?
In certain aspects. Within less than 10 years.
So the Evergreens learned from that, or they did not want to project it that early?
To the extent that that individual in 2078, that person is in this to a far greater degree. Define reality. You see, it's able now to change reality. Go from Toronto to New York. That's a simple change of reality.
Yeah.
But to have a reality to which consciousness would say, this is real, that's different. Now you have to go to New York. You cannot have New York come to you. And that is not the technology of it. Television, picture, sound, that's it. It binds you to it in just those two aspects.
Yes.
And it can become surprisingly real. But what if it directly impinged on the mind? There was no, it was all the senses of all the senses you have.
It's like if it was ESP.
Yes.
Inside you.
Yes. It would be real.
Right.
And there's going to be some experiments with virtual reality. But virtual reality is not a very large headset and a computer attached to it.
So my phrase cloning ESP is an indication of what we're talking about that's coming.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And there is a reference to ESP in Eric's new book, Electric Language, the extension of ESP. Is that an idea Marshall had, or Eric just adapted?
It's Eric's adaptation of it.
Does he understand the implications as you've just laid out?
Not completely.
All right.
Well, but not completely.
What was the words?
Well, but not completely.
All right. I'd like to move in, since there's not, you know, it's not that we've used up a lot of time, I'd like to go into some particulars, more rapid topics. I'd like to contact Stanley Kubrick, the film director. He died.
Yes, we have this one.
Yeah, he has a new movie out called Eyes Wide Shut, and it's a lot about secret societies and sex. Is there something about secret societies in particular that he wanted to point out?
No. What he wanted to point out is how divided a society can be.
Why was that of concern to him? Did he see the new media creating that?
Yes.
So he didn't understand the fractionalization principle that the Evergreens are talking about.
Now he approaches it from a different angle.
Creating a different problem.
Yes.
So that's valid.
Yes.
Yes. So the secret society element is not that big of a theme.
It's more that people of like-mindedness go into certain groups and then isolate themselves from others. There's an isolationist aspect to it.
Which it gets into the distraction theme.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, one thing about Julian James, the origins of the bicameral mind.
Yes.
When cognizance came in, then there was a lot of, quote, hallucinating and a lot of ESP and psychic ability in Cro-Magnon men.
Yes.
The concretization that happened since then, and we lost those abilities slightly, was that caused by writing?
Yes.
Did prophets, say, 5,000 years ago, foresee the, quote, dark ages we were going into as the effect of writing?
No, they did not see it.
Nobody saw that?
No.
So nobody knew that. Did we go into a dark age, say, from 3,000 B.C., where man was supposedly more militaristic, or maybe he wasn't, but we lost all those romanticized crystalline technologies, and I can see how we developed these new technologies. So did we go into a dark age?
Yes.
And I asked somebody through Therese Doré, a guide, why that happened, and the entity didn't answer. Isn't that a mystery of why we went into a dark age?
Not really.
Well,
you see, if you take writing as the substitution of a talent, then would that talent be exercised?
No.
No, it would not. Writing came in as a necessity. The Dark Age was that the two did not exist simultaneously. You can't have writing and ESP at the same time.
Right.
That was their problem. Their problem was they could not rationalize one or the other, so they had to choose one or the other.
And this was not anticipated, this was instinctive.
Yes.
So it was an invisible effect, but the writing was the beginning of a virtual reality.
Yes. There is also that which institute a concreteness,
which I think helped us get to the point now to create so much distraction.
Yes.
So it was necessary. Did God know that was going to happen?
No.
That's a good. God did not know that. Well, it's interesting then. Humans are creating new realities through our own technologies that all of creation and spirit is interested in.
Yes, absolutely. So considerable interest.
So there is an ongoingness to creation.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not all pre-planned, there's no eschaton.
No, because if it were pre-planned, then where is choice?
Right.
And why the necessity of distraction?
And when you say choice, I think of James Joyce, and that's The Happy Fall, which was a theme in Finnegan's Wake.
Yes.
That's another The Happy Distraction.
Yes.
All right. Did JFK Jr.'s plane crash out of human accident?
Human error. Not accident.
Yeah.
Error. Untrained insufficiency.
Now, it had an iconic effect like Lady Diana. Was there some Kennedy family karma that was acted out on that?
Yes.
Did some souls in the Kennedy family who are dead almost energize JFK to do that?
No, not to do it.
Did he reincarnate?
But to realize it was going to happen with him.
Oh, he knew before?
It was known before that he would. That was the highest probability. Not that it was fixed and rigid. That there was a probability that he would do this.
It was known by him?
Not by him, but those who had passed on before.
I had this idea that they said, yes, JFK Jr. almost willingly made the mistake and did it because he was taking on the family's, the evil things they'd done. There was a sacrifice.
No, not carried that far.
But I would guess carrying a core belief of tragedy.
Carrying the belief that this was a probability. JFK Jr. wondered whether he would live out the full span of his years.
Because of what happened to other members?
Yes.
Right.
And how this interacted with other people. Would someone say that they wanted to make their mark in the world by shooting JFK Jr.?
Right.
Now, from one aspect, he cheated them all.
Right. Were there people who might have tried to kill him?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, now when there's a controversy over whether he wanted to go on that flight and he wanted to do it to be macho, or his wife forced him to do it for the sister. Can you ever say which was?
It was his decision. She didn't want to go.
She intuited?
Yes.
Not consciously.
Not consciously.
Just nervous.
Yes.
Now, when the plane starts to crash, are they screaming their heads off as it goes down?
There's considerable noise in the cabin, yes.
Yes. And when they hit the water, they don't feel any pain, do they?
Momentarily, yes, but the moment is very quick.
Yeah, so it's there and gone.
Yes.
So death doesn't have a sting, instant death like that.
In that, no.
So when they were dead, were they go into the dream state or did they wake up?
Dream.
And that's because part of that is because of the shock of the whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
They come out of the dream yet?
One has, two haven't.
Who has?
The sister.
Lorraine.
Yes.
Yes. All right, so I'd like to ask about Madame Blavatsky. Was she a real medium or did she do tricks?
She didn't know how good she was. Oft times. She did that which surprised herself. What she tried to do was not show the surprise.
Because it was understood she was making up tricks.
Yes, but no. Tricks abounded. There are 700 odd conjuring tricks that could be used. But she didn't.
And yet she couldn't communicate to them that it was happening, really.
Exactly.
All right, so they got more than they bargained for.
Oh, and so did she.
All right. We talked about Drenvalo Mikelzadik on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's putting out an email all around the world that some Sufi group in Turkey has discovered this pure water or something that purifies water and will clean up pollution. Is there any truth to that?
No.
Why is he putting that out?
Because he's falling into the trap
of upping the ante.
He's now in on it.
Is there no Sufi people he's contacted that's in on it with him?
No, there are some that would be best described as adepts, but no master.
Right. So what we're doing, the desal water, is the real thing that can clean up water.
The desal.
That Carolyn and I use.
Yes.
Yes, that's real.
That's real.
Yeah. I had a dream with Dr. Beter, I think, on September 5th or 6th. He came to me. It was a strange dream because it was about him returning from being away. And then in the dream, he's going to tell us what he's been doing while away. But nobody shows up for the lecture. Everybody gets bored waiting and leaves. Was Dr. Beter talking to me?
Yes.
What was he? Was he telling me something concerned to him?
No. What he has to learn is that he doesn't need a crowd.
But Dr. Beter is dead.
Yes, but he doesn't need a crowd. He only needs your dream. And how many people did he want you to populate your dream with to make him satisfied?
How many people did he want me to?
Yes.
Well, I kept seeing David Bowie, and I was trying to get David Bowie to see it.
But it didn't. You were the dreamer.
So I was the audience.
You were the audience. What he had to learn was that he didn't need a large group.
And he thought he did when he was communicating to me.
Yes.
So he learned something from it.
He learned something, and the next time he will then realize that he doesn't need a large group, or for you to create in a dream a large group to make him feel satisfied.
In trying to communicate to me?
Yes.
So what did he want to communicate to me?
He says, and we do not wish to be obtuse, but he says, he will tell you.
Ah, so that was a rehearsal.
Yes, but what he learned is one listener focused is better than 20 unfocused.
Right, so he's just learning how to connect with people.
Yes.
On the physical plane.
Exactly.
All right. The MIT announced on July 28, 1999, they've broken through an understanding of the cancer sequence. That's an MIT.
Yes.
Is that, again, another spin-off from the AIDS research?
No, this is something different.
All right. Now, John, I have some quick questions here. On March 13th, 1997, in Phoenix, Arizona, there were some lights that had manifested, and it became a legend locally, and I've seen it mentioned on TV, called the Phoenix Lights. What were those lights on March 13th, 1997?
Not of this world.
They were Boudian vehicles.
Yes.
Right, so that was one of the increasing sightings.
Yes.
Is there a reason they picked Phoenix?
No.
Yeah, because it is a culture in the Southwest America of many
True.
People learn to UFOs there.
True. That. No.
All right, I have a question for Tim Leary, who I've spoken to before.
Yes, we have this one.
Now, he told me through the Evergreens that he did not tell any evidence on people outside of jail and get them in trouble. He'd not inform on them while in jail.
No, he would not.
The FBI has released information a couple months ago that he did do that. Does he have something to say about that?
Yes, he does. It's wrong.
It's the image smearing game.
Yes.
Yes, I know his literary executor, literary agent, Douglas Rushkoff, said, well, if there was any validity, why didn't they go to court with it? Now, that's a good point, right?
Well, it is the point.
And so Leary stands by what he told me.
Yes. Approximately 2 minutes.
In the Oklahoma bombing in April 19th, 95, Leary said there was a third person, a John Doe.
Yes.
Can you identify who that is?
Not by name, but the Timothy McVeigh will... as a person who does talk in jail, this one will he's not liking this. He thought that what he was doing for the good of the United States is not a very happy experience at all. And he would want to shorten it. Can he shorten it? He's going to try, and he's going to give the name of the third person.
Who was the controller of the operation?
Who was the supporter of it.
All right. And was it an American national?
Yes.
Part of the right, the survivalist movement?
Yes.
All right, because I think the Evergreen saw an Iranian or Iraqi involved.
There is, and that's peripheral.
All right, so here's a question for Carolyn. She's very concerned about the controversy over the health effects of aspartame. She says it breaks into methanol and formaldehyde when it is at 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, the body temperature is 98.6 or so. Therefore, if you take aspartame, it breaks it down. The body temperature breaks it down to methanol and formaldehyde.
It does.
So is there a health problem there?
If enough of it is ingested, yes. But due to efforts by, not a counterculture, but against aspartame will be removed from the market within less than 48 months.
So the hysteria is not that of... Once you not get, it's being exaggerated, but it is a problem.
Yes, it is.
How much is too much? Or does it vary per individual?
It varies per individual.
But what is too much average for a person daily?
If you were to take a standard soft drink can, eight is a problem. Now, not that many do have eight. The problem is that it does break down. There is a South American plant that has a greater sweetness than aspartame, and that is going to be a big cash crop in South America, and that will replace it.
All right. Is
we do not have the name at this present time.
Stevia?
One moment. It is stevia, yes.
Okay, good. The mellophyone is being sprayed in New York City. Do we currently have to be concerned, or is there any antidote we should take for that?
Well, the simplest antidote is vitamin C.
All right. Real vitamin C, not fake vitamin C.
Whatever.
All right. Her co-writer, Jeffrey Ewan, says that one can eat the disease, that one has the right attitude, one can eat a lot of bad things and not get affected by them. Beyond being a yogi, can the average person do that?
If you're willing to believe that you can transform strychnine into something else very quickly, we would advise against it.
So there are limitations.
Oh, most assuredly.
To the virtual foods we are creating.
Yes.
Yeah, they need to be corrected.